100 days on the place, yeah, man. It's a kick it, you know. That's right.
Yeah, me rolling and rock it to the beat, and me love the sound.
Oh, Chess, you can mess with the sound. Better grab your girl, your posse, and gather round.
Yeah, me rolling and bobbing and going like a mad man. Oh, the man got the studio for 19 or long, so me say.
Hey, 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 Digital Sister back. How's everybody? I want to say hello to all of my new friends of the podcast that is growing, and I'm so excited about that. I want to say hi to Rough Mix, Brian of Rough Mix. Hi to Danger Zone. Hi to Her Voice. And hi to David Craig with Reality News Network. I want to thank you all for becoming friends of Digital Sister. And to my fan, Danger Zone, I want to thank you for becoming a fan. It's very exciting to hear from you guys and to know that you guys are checking out the podcast and that you like it. It's great to be part of the podcast family. And I want to say hi to my new fans in Sydney, Australia. Very excited to see so many downloads there. Thanks for that. And also, the podcast is growing over there in Europe. I mean, I've had several downloads from two cities in Germany, Hamburg and Frankfurt. And then we also have some folks tuning in Poland, in Austria, in Mexico, Brazil. And let's see, what was the other place that people were tuning in that I was very excited? Oh, in Lebanon also, despite all of the carnage that's going on there. So I want to thank you for really and truly making Digital Sister a truly, truly international podcast. It's so cool. Anyway, let's get right into it. Well, it seems as though Mel Gibson has been charged, you know, for his... actually, I think was charged fairly for the drunk driving and carrying an open container in the car. He's issued about two public statements and apologies to try to repair the damage to his reputation and his career. We've seen some people come out. Marv Edelson, he used to be married to Barbara Walters for a hot minute a couple years ago, but he's a producer that starred at Lorimar and some of the shows that we know, Eight Is Enough, The Waltons, things like that. But he took out a full page and said, you know, that people ought to speak out and that, you know, they should not do business with this jerk. You have actor Rob Schneider coming out and saying something that he probably has no intention of ever working with him. You have Barbara Walters saying she may never see another Mel Gibson film. So I think the fallout is happening gradually, and I wonder, you know, how he's going to repair the damage to not necessarily his career, because, excuse me, I think his career will continue because he just has the ability and the wealth to create and distribute his own film, so he can work somewhat out of the system, so to speak. But I think the damage to him as an individual, as a person, I think is going to be just so much harder for him to repair. And I really don't know how he's going to do that, because he can issue statements until the cows come home and up the wazoo. But if it's not something that he truly feels, it's going to be tough for people to believe that these public apologies that are coming to his publicist are really sincere. And I don't know what he's going to do. I mean, he can maybe go to a couple of temples. He can probably meet with a couple of rabbis. And many of them are extending the olive branch, as he has indicated he would like to speak with them to work on a healing. But you know, I just don't know what he's going to do or how he's going to do this to repair the damage to how people see him. And it's almost, and the way things are today, it may be hard for some people to distinguish, you know, Mel Gibson, the actor, from Mel Gibson, the man, the person. And, you know, they may take it out on him at the box office. You know, that's kind of interesting. And that's going to be... a quandary that he's going to have to figure out. It's going to probably take some time. It's just going to take a lot of work and effort for him to repair the damage. And if he goes overboard with suddenly becoming, you know, such great friends within the Jewish community, you know, that's going to look fake and staged too. So, you know, I think he's going to have a tough time repairing his image, and I think he's going to have a tough time trying to figure out exactly how he's going to show people within Hollywood and how he's going to show people around the world that perhaps, you know, he's recognized that maybe he has some issues with prejudice, and that, you know, he's going to have to figure out how he's going to, you know, solve that dilemma. It's almost kind of like, you know, Michael Douglas a couple years ago. I like Michael Douglas. I like his films. But if you notice, he never has anybody of color in his films. I think the closest we ever got to that was in Traffic, where he had the actor Benito, Del Toro. But, you know, think about it. He really hasn't had very many people of color in his films. And I remember he had a public relations nightmare a couple of years ago because he was playing golf at a club in Westchester, New York. And he was playing, you know, with his buddies and all that. And I'm not a golfer, but he hit the ball. And I guess it went a great distance, and it hit, I think it was either a caddy or someone who worked at the club who happened to be, you know, African American. And apparently his comment was, you know, I hit the ball, I hit it far, and I hit the nigger. Well, once that leaked out, he went into overtime to show that, you know, he wasn't this racist, you know, that he had black friends, and that, you know, he's a friend of the NAACP, on and on and on and on and on. And it just kind of went away, you know, after a couple of days. He did a couple of mea culpas, and, you know, he didn't say that. You know, he put the whole spin on it to take away from something that he probably said. So it kind of died, and it apparently hasn't, you know, affected his career in that sense. But, you know, it does kind of let you know maybe how he feels, and that certainly is reflected in the movies that he makes, because there's nobody of color ever in his movies. He never interacts with anybody of color. So, I mean, that bears looking at. But for Mel, as I said before in my previous podcast, you know, he has African Americans in the film. He has characters where he's interacting. And let's look at the Lethal Weapon franchise with Danny Glover. He could have used anybody else, you know, white actor to play in that very lucrative franchise, you know, but he selected Danny Glover. And I think the thing that's missing that nobody ever, excuse me, ever really talked about is the bond and the relationship that, you know, this white guy and this black guy developed in the film, and how they really became friends. They helped each other out emotionally, and you saw how Riggs, that was the character that Mel Gibson played, you know, he just felt part of the family, and they welcomed him. And, you know, he dealt with that particular issue very well. But this whole thing, you know, with the Jewish community, I don't know what he's going to do. I wish him, you know, good luck. I hope he can, you know, work through this. I hope he will, excuse me, continue to make, you know, good thought-provoking movies. And I hope, at some point he's able to move on, and I hope that the community is able to move on. But he definitely has some work to do, and like I said before, I don't know how he's going to do it and make it look sincere. But let's shift gears a little bit. Talk a little bit about Tina Marie, because she's in the news, was interviewed for XXL magazine, and I really enjoyed, you know, reading about her and hearing how she thinks and what she thinks about the music scene today, because she was always kind of that icon, you know, when she came out in the late 70s, you know, with Rick James and all that. You know, she was always on the airwaves with all this great music, and you know, really putting it down and, you know, just laying it out, singing like a true sister. So we've always kind of known her and seen her around, but, you know, you really didn't hear too much from her to kind of get a sense of, you know, what she thought and how she feels about things. So it's very interesting in the recent issue of XXL that they have a nice interview about her that I was really excited to read about. She's very much a fan of hip-hop. You know, she knows a lot of things about hip-hop. She's from L.A., and she hit the scene in 1979, with songs like Square Biz. You know, we all danced to that, and of course the steamy duet Fire and Desire she did with Rick James. But now, you know, she's signed with Cash Money Millionaires. She's putting out great new music, and she's had some commentary on what's going on. She doesn't really, you know, like what's going on in the music scene, as I've talked about in several podcasts. You know, it's the same kind of, like she said, VIP, I'm the very important person, I'm the bling bling, you know, I'm the one. And the thing that she said that's what is lacking today in a lot of the hip-hop, and she doesn't even call the stuff that's going on hip-hop today, but she said they're not telling stories anymore like they did when hip-hop first came out, excuse me, and just, you know, little observations about the neighborhood and interesting things were turned into great songs, you know, like LL Cool J, you know, Round the Way Girl, great classic, you know. He wasn't dissing her or calling her a bitch or a hoe or anything like that. It was just, you know, a neighborhood girl, girl around the way, you know, but great song, and it still sounds good today. But that's what's lacking today. The songs are not really telling stories. It's all about who I am, you know, how great I am, how I'm dissing some other rapper. But it's not about telling a story. It's not about, like, falling in love. You know, that's what's lacking today. And I think people like myself and, you know, people like Tina Marie, excuse me, you know, that's what we want to hear. We want to hear a story along with some good music. We just don't want to hear a synthesizer and some drum beats, the same hook. Because if you listen to some of the hip-hop stations, for one thing, they play the same song maybe three times within the hour, three or four times within the hour. If you listen, if you don't listen carefully, you think you're listening to the same song because they all kind of have the same hook. They all kind of have that same beat. I mean, you know, I hate to say it, but like this new cut with Janet and Nelly, I mean, I don't really like it. And it's, I mean, I know she has to pair herself with the, you know, current hip-hop stars to stay current, but, you know, she really doesn't need to. She needs to just get back with Terry Lewis and Jimmy Jam and start putting out that good music like Control back in 86, you know? And I think that's what her new album is supposed to have, that kind of flavor. But, you know, the song isn't any good. It's just, you know, it's like, yuck. But unfortunately, that's the kind of stuff that's coming out today. It's not really good music. It's not, you know, really reaching us in our gut. But Tina, you know, talked about that. She talked about how they're not telling stories. She talked about how it's just a synthesizer and beats, you know, things like that. It's nothing that's really grabbing people. And she's saying that's what we have to get back to. And if you think about it, I think that's the quandary of what's going on in New York hip-hop right now. You know, 50 is, you know, kind of like the king of New York rap right now, and he's kind of muscled his way in, you know, dissing people and, you know, getting publicity that way, and maybe to some degree because of the success that he's had, you know, because it's a competitive type of industry. You know, a lot of people are spending time hating on other rappers and worrying about what the other rappers are doing and what kind of publicity they're getting and all of that, instead of just going into the studio, you know, knowing what you are as an artist, knowing the kind of music that you do, and just putting down some tracks. Don't worry about what other people are thinking. Don't worry about what the other rapper's doing. Just get in there and focus on your music and put out a good product. And I think that's what's happened today. Instead of a lot of New York rappers doing that, a lot of them are in a quandary trying to figure out, where their place is right now, because the Southern rap, the crunk, the hyphy from the West Coast, and the snap from the South has really, that's what you hear on the airwaves. It's about maybe, I'd say, 4 or 5 songs that they're playing constantly. And you don't really hear too much else. And really, all of the other songs that come out are trying to emulate the success that the Southern hip-hop has, and they're making music which sounds very much like the Southern hip-hop. It doesn't sound like the old West Coast or some of the old East Coast, and that is just what's happening in music today. They were able, the Southern rappers, to kind of play on the success of the New York hip-hop audience, but they were able to put a different spin on it. And, Nelly and the Grills, and the Bling Bling and all this other kind of stuff. That's what's happening right now. So I think what's going to have to happen is that if the New York rappers want to kind of come back into the forefront, then, and be the leaders that they were, almost 30 years ago, it's going to have to emerge from either some new talent that's just going to just step up and say, I'm back to telling a story and here's some good beats, or it's going to be one of the older rappers who finally finds a niche and is able to come up with something fresh. But that may be difficult, so it really may have to be a new voice. I mean, let's look at how Chris Brown just came out of nowhere, and he kind of took over, where Usher was a couple years ago. And now that Usher's getting older, he's doing other things. He's now, going to be doing a show on Broadway. And he can do that because he has the talent of being able to sing and to dance and to do the mainstream kind of thing. I think with so many of the other rappers, as I've said in previous podcasts, they're in a quandary now because they're getting older. They probably don't feel like they should be singing the same kind of stuff they were singing when they first started maybe 20 years ago. So they're really in a quandary, trying to figure out where they fit, what will be their music, what will be their theme, how can they come up with something fresh. So it's probably going to have to take maybe another year or two before we see something else come up and that will begin to kind of change the Southern hip-hop and maybe some of the hyphy and get back to the New York hip-hop, the type of music that really laid the foundation for the beginning of hip-hop that everybody else is doing. But yeah, Tina Marie is right on. I liked what she said. And they asked about Cash Money. And she said they really treat her very well. They treat her like a lady. They, went after her, and she felt comfortable with them, and that's why she signed with them. And they, to their credit, recognized that, she was one of those great R&B voices that just really wasn't being heard at the moment. And so they, stepped up to the plate and presented her with something interesting, and she signed, and we're all enjoying the music of Tina Marie again. And the great thing about it was, this shows that she has some talent and staying power, because with the passing of Rick James about maybe 3 or 4 years ago, perhaps she would have just gone away and nobody would have heard from her again. But I think that speaks to her talent and the fact that it's a voice that was missed, that she's able to come back. She was able to reformulate. She was able to come back, not at Motown or some other label, but with a hip-hop label and with people who valued, who she was and her singing style and all that. So I think it's a really great story. She would like to see something different in hip-hop, I think, like many of us would. But it's great to have her back. It's great to hear, you know, what she's thinking about. And it's just great, you know, that she's still around with us and able to share information and history with us and able to share information and history about Rick James. No matter what you thought about him, he put the music down, okay? He was good. He was real good. But let's move on a little bit to the politics situation. Looks like Cynthia McKinney and Joe Lieberman, I mean, these are people who were deeply entrenched, Joe Lieberman in the Senate and Cynthia McKinney in the Congress. And she had the distinction of being the first black woman in Congress, you know, from the state of Georgia. But they're kind of in political fights for their lives right now. And that's kind of interesting to see what's going to happen. I think Lieberman, you know, he's almost too much like a Republican, and he supported the war and pretty much anything that George Bush did. And now he's having to fight for his life. And in the past, he's never had an opponent. And now he's got to go up against, I believe his name is Ned Lamont, and he's got to, you know, he's got to fight. And if he loses, just to show you how I think it's hard for a lot of these politicians to let go and move on, he's going to run as an independent. And people are trying to tell him not to do that. You know, but that's what he's going to do. And in the case of Cynthia McKinney, you know, she's kind of been kind of outspoken. And, you know, earlier in the year, she got into the scuffle with the Capitol Police because, you know, they didn't recognize her because she wasn't wearing her pin to identify herself. And there was a little altercation where, you know, she struck a police officer, and that was a big brouhaha for a couple of days. Well, you know, she's in the fight for her life, too, right now. She lost before but was able to get her seat back, but now she's being challenged by a gentleman who holds political office in the Georgia area, too. It's a black guy, as I said, but, you know, she's up against that, and people are looking at that. So it's going to be interesting with these two people who have been in public life for several years, if they're going to be able to move on in the event that they are not reelected, or will there be sour grapes? But, you know, I think that speaks to what happens sometimes in public life. I think, you know, you have to have something in the back burner in case you don't get reelected. And it must be very hard to give up the perks that go, you know, with being a senator, and that goes with being a congressperson. So I'm sure that, you know, they want to hang on and stay in that cloistered world. But I wonder, if they are not reelected, what will they do? Will they go off into the sunset gracefully, or will there be contentiousness with demanding recounts and all that? And really, if that happens, it also speaks to having the ability to let go, to kind of look at yourself and see where you are, and then reinvent yourself for something else. So that will be interesting to see, you know, what happens with that race. But I was reading something that I thought was kind of interesting, which is talking about discrimination, and they were talking about women of color in top law firms who, you know, are having a tough time. And really, they're not really staying, you know, beyond maybe a couple years, because even though they may perhaps bring in the client that will bring in those billable hours, a lot of the times they're given assignments where they can't and don't even interact with clients, or they're not invited to the after-work social events where the networking goes on. So hence, you may come from a great school, you may bring in a client or two, but if you're not valued, and if you're not seen as someone who has potential to really enhance the firm, then you're not going to go anywhere. And the sad part that this article talked about is the lack of awareness amongst many top law firms, which, you know, let's be honest, they're predominantly white and white males in those partner positions, but there's such a lack of insight and really concern about the very issues. So you see, if you act like you're unaware, then you never address the issue, and hence the perpetuation of that subtle racism continues, because, you know, you're going to always play dumb like, oh, I didn't realize that, but you don't do anything to change it. And so what happens is a lot of the women of color could be Asian, could be Pacific Islander person, could be an African American, but they're asked like these ridiculous questions, you know, like an Asian woman asserted herself, so she was called the Dragon Lady. Someone else was Native American. They asked, like, where was her tomahawk? You know, something like that. And it's just, like, unbelievable that these are the kind of things that are still being said. And if, like, if there's a black lawyer, you know, looking past her as if she's perhaps a secretary or someone other than a colleague. So, you know, these types of things are still going on today, despite the fact that we're in the 21st century, despite the fact that, you know, we have all kinds of regulations and things like that to make a way for a diverse workplace. But, hey, still at the top and still at a lot of these law firms, that is not the case. They're not interested in diversity. Probably give lots of lip service to it, but in reality, when it's there in your firm, you don't really do anything to support it, encourage it, and nurture it so that it can enhance the whole company. So, you know, the old boy, the old white boy network is still very big, still very prevalent, apparently, within the law circles, just as it is within corporate America. So that's kind of sad that something hasn't changed, you know, that there's still a lack of awareness and inclusion in that kind of situation. But let's talk again about MTV. You know, everybody's still talking about the 25 years and how great it is, and looking at all the changes and things that have happened and how it really changed the face of music, how it changed the way we look at music, and how it changed the way music was sold. I mean, think about it. When it came out, I mean, you had all kinds of businesses that were created, you know, video production companies, all kinds of things, because everybody was jumping on that bandwagon to make the videos. So, you know, it's just kind of interesting that they were so cutting edge in many ways, and, you know, they had to be shaken up to kind of loosen up their own little, you know, racist attitudes too, and, you know, let Michael Jackson come on, you know, and with Thriller and all that. But definitely it's one of those industries like hip hop, something that changed the culture, something that changed the landscape, something that made us look at everything so differently, and it created a whole new industry. I mean, it's just like hip hop. So, and really, they're almost about close in age. MTV's 25 years, hip hop's about 30 years. So, you know, these are things that are very fascinated, and they've become part of the culture, and they change the culture. So, very important, but very interesting that it's still here. It's a little different than what it was, but, you know, it changed the way we related to music. It made stars out of all kinds of artists who really weren't singers, a la Paula Abdul. You know, let's not go there. But, you know, and think about the early Janet Jackson videos, how great and fun they were, because, you know, there was a storyline. There were characters. There was all this choreography. You know, that's how Paula Abdul made her name, with the L.A. Lakers, but then she started doing work with Janet Jackson and her videos, you know, during that Control era. So, you know, it's just been an interesting phenomenon that hasn't gone away. And I just think, wow, what would life be like without MTV? I mean, there probably would be something else, but I wonder what it would be like if there never was that. you know? There would be so many artists who are stars today who we would have never heard of, you know? So I think that's kind of interesting. Just a little thought indeed. So I think, you know, I've kind of talked a little bit way enough at this time, but continue to be a friend of Digital Sister. I look forward to your comments. Oh, yes, speaking of comments, I want to thank Steph for making a good observation about the Monique issue. And she was absolutely right. You know, sometimes people, and it gets back to the whole racism thing, but sometimes people treat you negatively because they don't think you should be in a particular place. And so, yes, there were these words, but maybe the underlying thing, as Steph kind of pointed out, was maybe that flight attendant didn't really think, you know, that Monique, maybe she didn't know who Monique was, but maybe she didn't think this black woman should be sitting in first class. You know, there's still that kind of feeling that, you know, because you're a person of color, you don't belong in certain places, and people, you know, will treat you accordingly, and then there's a backlash. So I want to thank Steph for, you know, posting that comment and, you know, giving me some feedback. I appreciate it. So keep listening, keep tuning in, keep passing the podcast around, keep becoming a fan, and keep becoming a friend. I really appreciate it. I look forward to hearing from you, and I look forward to finding interesting things for us to talk about and discuss. So you have a great week, and I'll be back with you in a few days. Digital Sister signing out. The West Side.